Hello, I'm John Torpy. Thank you for subscribing to the Market Analysis Podcast. We appreciate your support.
This is the Friday, December 11, 2020 version of the Market Analysis segment from Market to Market. Grain markets were mixed overnight as traders continued to adjust to yesterday's USDA numbers. In light of the report, many are focusing on South American weather, demand headlines, and the holidays. March wheat skyrocketed the last 2 days of trade to finish higher for the week by 39 cents, while the nearby corn contract added 3 cents. The weather report took the wind from the January soybean sales, resulting in a 3-cent loss. January soybean meal declined 5.20 per ton. March cotton expanded 2.53 per hundredweight. In the dairy parlor, January Class 3 milk futures improved 59 cents. A mixed week in the livestock sector. February cattle gained 85 cents. January feeders weakened a nickel. And the February lean hog contract fell 3.35. In the currency markets, the U.S. dollar index gained 24 ticks. January crude oil improved 57 cents per barrel. COMEX gold gained $3 per ounce. And the Goldman Sachs commodity index increased more than 2 points to finish at 391.50. Now here to provide insight are two of our regular market analysts, Naomi Bloom and Matthew Bennett. Hello to the two of you.
Hello.
All right, Naomi, I'm going to give you the first crack here at giving me your best tweet of the report. So this means keep it short. And what were the headlines of Thursday's USDA report?
Headlines were that the corn market for the report was just as it was expected. There were no big changes at all anywhere on the balance sheet. So that was expected, and the market responded just neutral. For the soybean market, they were looking for a more bullish report, looking for ending stocks to come in at 169, but instead they came in at 175 million bushels, which is still down from the month prior, but just not quite as much lower as what market participants were hoping for. And then with the wheat market, that's the one that stole the show. Lower ending stocks, much more than expected. So that's what gave the wheat market a little bit of a lift this week.
Matt, do you have a different set of headlines, or is that how you saw the report?
No, that's how I saw the report. Essentially, I think that your bulls were a little disappointed that maybe exports didn't go up for either corn or beans. Kind of a blasé report, but typically you see a blasé report in the month of December. I think it's just a lot of folks, after November's fireworks, wondered if maybe we'd get some excitement out of December as well. We didn't, which I think was as expected, I guess for me anyway.
Is this wheat market stuck in a Brady Bunch moment? Instead of it being Marsha, 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 it's Russia, Russia, Russia. Is there something else going on?
I think with the wheat market, I mean, essentially, I'm sorry, Paul. It's showing Naomi right now. Is this right?
Yeah, you're on. I see you. I hear you. Okay. We can switch back and forth. It's the way you watch it. It's the power of technology. And I know my Brady Bunch comment threw you, so that's what I know has gotten you off. But let's go back to Russia and the wheat market, Matt.
Okay. Well, you know, whenever you look at the wheat market, I mean, essentially Russia's saying they're wanting to throw an export tax on. At the same time, this Russian crop gets downgraded a little bit. But, I mean, USDA's at 84. I've seen some private estimates all the way down well under 75. And so, you know, how much wheat are the Russians going to put out there? It's not like a crop failure by any means, but the Russians have been throwing a lot of wheat on the world market the last few years. So I think the wheat market is looking at a lot of different things. For instance, world carry might drop just a little bit. U.S. carry down at, 850 right now. Some folks are saying it could get under 800 easily. You know, and whenever you're producing the kind of wheat that over a 2 billion bushel crop, we've seen a lot of 50% stocks to use ratio, or stocks to use ratios the last few years. I mean, you could be looking at something well below that, even though we're not going to run out of wheat anytime soon. It's just a much tighter situation than what we're accustomed to.
Naomi, do you see China sniffing around the market as also an influencer? Maybe the weather dry in the plains and other producing areas?
It's multi-factors. Building on what Matt said, 22% of the Russian wheat crop is rated as poor because it's had poor germination because it's so dry there. And that's why they're trying to do the export tax. So they're trying to curb themselves back and limit what they're exporting. Chinese demand, I think, is strong and has the ability to get stronger because they're going to need the wheat as a feed substitute going forward. Even though China has half of the world's ending stocks of wheat, do they really? much people think that maybe some of it is out of quality, or that in general, because of the additional hogs that they're going to have, there's going to be more demand. And when you look at the United States, I've been hearing from clients that they are very concerned about the wheat that they planted. It hasn't germinated, and the soil conditions are quite dry. So wheat might have a future for higher prices down the road. And I'm also keeping an eye on spring wheat. I think it's undervalued. I think spring wheat acres are going to be in jeopardy this spring because of the high price of soybeans. So I'm keeping an eye on the Minneapolis wheat also.
Do you have a range on that Minneapolis contract?
Well, right now we got up to about the 570 area for the nearby March. And so it got through a short-term resistance area today, some moving averages. If it can push a little higher, I think we can get closer to 580, at most $6. That would be pushing it. We need some news to really get it to happen. But it's got some good fundamental and technical chart support as well.
All right, Matt, are you buy, selling, or holding wheat right now? Any of the contracts?
You know, I guess in my opinion, the wheat market has shown a little bit of flair here, but the people that I'm talking to like the profit margins that they see. So typically I look at it as a risk management, a hedging type situation. Whenever I get July, Chicago wheat above $6, I like Chicago wheat in that area. Am I going to sell it all? No, but if I was going to be put on the spot, buyer or seller, I'd say I'd be selling wheat whenever I get safely above $6, at least on a percentage basis.
Naomi, let's go to corn for a moment. You talk about the report was not bullish for corn necessarily, and bulls need fresh news. Are the two tied together specifically in corn, or is that more of a factor in other contracts?
Well, with the corn market, the biggest things that I'm keeping an eye on continue to be exports and ethanol. We have export sales at about 67% of USDA projections, and the USDA thinks that we're going to be exporting about 2.6 billion bushels of corn, so that's significant. So I thought it was prudent and smart that they didn't raise exports on this report. I thought that was really good. And then, of course, ethanol demand. We've had ethanol inventories at about a 27-week high just because we haven't been traveling for Thanksgiving like normal. So that is of concern. So I thought the USDA did a good job of not making any changes on the report. But going forward, 1.7 billion bushel carryout with as tight as the soybean carryout is, the market is well supported. $4 support continues to be great support for front month contracts. Deferred contracts, the December is staying over $4 futures also. I still like corn market. It has potential, but we need obviously news to get it to spur over the resistance points.
Is there a number after the four that gets us a flashing sign? You know, you talk about $4 resistance. If we get below 410, do you start thinking about putting some sales in?
Right now for the front month contracts, there is really good support at the 410 area. And then of course, $4 below there. I think selling corn now at these higher values is just good marketing. It's good value. You just never know what could maybe come around and make prices turn lower. But at the same time, I would say that the $4 point is just definitely major, major support. Unless that breaks, I'm not overly concerned at this time, but I don't want to be complacent either because it's 2020 and I'm sure there's going to be one black swan lurking somewhere.
All right, Matt, you get to take that answer. Is there a black swan coming in corn? No, you don't have to answer that one. But do you see a black swan event as the biggest thing that could impact this market, or is it some of the other factors that Naomi just laid out?
Well, yeah, I mean, there's no doubt that there's always going to be something out there none of us are thinking about. And so with that being said, I think just kind of going along with what Naomi said, you've got as a producer to understand what these prices mean for your bottom line as compared to where we were at, you know, before the rally started. And so we came into the month of August, and I mean, it was just, man, blasé, frustrating. Producers were worried about whether we were going to pay the bills again this year, you know, and then everything changed. Everything changed dramatically. And so, you know, I guess from my vantage point, I can go along with the fact that the USDA stated a 1.7. I'm maybe a little more in the camp that it's going to get tighter from here, though. I think whenever you see China going up to 16.5, as far as how much corn they're going to import, that's probably going to go on up, I guess, from my vantage point. Whenever I look at world stocks, for instance, you know, they're still accounting for a heck of a lot of corn in China. they put 50 million metric tons out on their government auctions. I don't think the people that bought that corn was just going to put it in their storage facility and let it sit. I don't know why it's not coming off the world ledger. I think it's a tighter situation than what we're currently seeing both world and domestically. Does that mean we're going to rally through the roof? I'm not sure. That's a really good question. So as a producer, if you sell some corn and then you keep a long bias on a limited risk basis, I think that makes a ton of sense.
Does it, Naomi? You're shaking your head up and down like you might think it does. Does it?
I think it does, because we've seen that anything can happen with marketing, with how prices move. So if you're moving grain, if you're making cash sales, the basis continues to improve for a lot of places. You do have the money flow. You are making better sales than you've been at. And again, the stars have to continue to align in order for prices to continue to just march higher. We do need bad weather in South America. We need it to stay dry here next spring and summer. We need China to keep buying and the dollar to stay low. So if you can make sure that all four of those things are going to happen, great. You know what the market's going to do. But the reality is, make some cash sales if it is a good profitable point for you. And like Matt said, we are able to help you with reownership strategies if it looks like the market may be going higher, and you can do fixed risk strategies and have some upside potential to capture it on paper.
Naomi, you bring up a great point, because I seem to remember not that long ago listening to the analysts on this show say, if this happens, if this happens, if this happens, but I don't know if we can hit black or red twice in a year. That's a lot of ifs. So I think you've got good advice there about, you know, put some sales in the book. So, Matt, I'm going to flip to you now for a question when we move into soybeans. Is CONAB a bigger deal with what Brazil reported, a bigger impact on soybeans than what the WASDE was yesterday? Which one had a bigger effect on that market?
Oh, I don't know. I would say CONAB probably had a bigger effect. I mean, whenever you look at WASDE, it seems like they trail CONAB a little bit. You know, I've got to think that USDA is a little lethargic in making big adjustments, and maybe they're just not comfortable with making those adjustments in Brazil. You know, you talk to private folks down there, and they're down around that 126 to 128 level. Some of them are. And so I think this Brazilian crop has certainly been hurt here in the first crop in some areas. Now, other areas obviously are going to be doing well. We know how that is here in the U.S. We saw extremely good soybean yields for the early beans that were planted that were able to get past a critical stage before you got into that dry period in August, whereas some of the later planted beans, as we saw in the November report, certainly took a hit because you had that huge yield drop between October and November. So I think that you could see some real wide disparities in Brazil as well. We're going to learn a lot as we move forward, but I think CONAB probably had a little bigger impact.
Naomi, you've sent out a lot of charts this week, and there's a couple of them that got my attention. And one of them that you said, you talked about the lowest estimate that we've got in 7 years. Does that concern you?
As far as ending stocks
go? I'm sorry, on ending stocks, yes.
Yeah, so where we're at right now for ending stocks, and more specifically the stocks-to-use ratio, we're at 3.9% on a stocks-to-use ratio, obviously lower than last month. Second lowest in the past 20 years. So that is significant. So what is remaining of the crop, the stocks-to-use ratio, it really does matter. And so that is going to keep the market well supported going forward until we have any idea that potentially we do have multiple additional acres planted next spring and a bountiful crop coming. But until then, it's going to keep basis probably tighter on soybeans and also keep those front month contracts supported overall. So it's very important to watch that and monitor it. But again, as of this moment, we don't have specific news to get the bean price over $12, but at the bigger time too, great support at the 1150 area and then ultimately below there at $11.
Well, you just took part of my answer from this following question, but I want to give this one. It came via Twitter. Bradley in Nebraska was asking this over there in the upland area. He says, following Thursday's report for USDA, would it be wise to start marketing some of 2021's corn and soybean crops? So, Naomi, you just gave me some prices. You think it's wise to market some soybeans right now?
For next November, for
yeah.
new crop?
Let's say new crop.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, new crop is at the 1050, 1025 price area. It's been trading in a sideways range. It's better than anything you probably started at this year, so it would be a good place to get started for next year. Absolutely. A 5% sale, 10% sale, I think is a prudent thing to do.
Matt, any wider sale mark right now, more than 10%, 11%? Are you with Naomi on that new crop?
Yeah, actually, you know, officially I'm at 20%. And what I've done here is I set a floor into the market. So, you know, set a floor into the market and then, you know, maybe sell a call above the market of $1, $1.20 above the market. So I have a little bit of room to run, a little bit of flexibility in that strategy. Obviously, I'm capped out, but I'm only capped out on maybe 20%. And so I do like setting a floor under these prices. Like Naomi said, these are really good prices compared to what we've seen the last several years. You look at the yields we saw this past year in the last couple, 3 years. If you have an average crop and you're cashing in anywhere close to $10 on your cash price out of the field, that's a heck of a good winner. And I want to lock in as much of that as what I can.
All right, Naomi, right about an hour before we recorded, Tom Vilsack was introduced as a chance to be Secretary of Agriculture again. Still has to go through the confirmation process. Sonny Perdue has led a USDA effort for a big food buying program, the BOX program. Dairy was a big part of that. That ran us up tremendously over the last few months. Fell off a little bit, but now we're starting to see some light at the end of the tunnel. What is that light?
Well, I'm wondering if the market is excited about Tom Vilsack because of what he's been doing with the dairy exports right now, and so he is familiar with the industry. The dairy market, as you know, we had $24 milk this summer because of the cheese buying program, and then with the cheese buying program and the farm-to-family program coming to an end at the end of 2020, the milk price plummeted. December contract going down to the $15 area. But meanwhile, when you look out at the 2021 prices, they had just been patiently sitting at the $16 level because they know that milk production right now is still really near record large. So we have a lot of milk out there and we need the demand of the farm to families program. So Mr. Vilsack, if you're watching, please make sure it continues. It is really good for not only the American dairy farmer, but of course for just America as well, as a lot of people are still out of work. And so I'm wondering if those deferred contracts are thinking that we're going to see the cheese buying continue. And that's why actually they started to move a little bit higher this week, with even the March contract today getting up to $18.
Matt, the word in the live cattle market is volatile again. It's hit at the other market, so why not live cattle market? Do you see, how long does this volatility last?
Well, you know, the interesting thing is we're still range bound. You know, you look at this like 110 to 116 area in February's, and I mean, basically we can't break out of that. You see box beef prices off a little bit, but then cash prices are off a little bit. Margins are still good. So packer margins are good. What are they going to do? They're going to go through as many cattle as what they possibly can. And it's a good thing because there's plenty of supply out there. I'm still the same way that I've been for a long time, though. I guess I can't get super friendly to prices until I get out past maybe the second quarter. I think whenever you start to see the numbers a little more favorable, in my opinion, you can look at a little bit higher beef cattle. I think fats probably in that 115 to 120 range later in the year is very, very believable. But before that, I just don't see it.
All right. In the feeder market, Naomi, there's a little bit of spillover what's going on in live cattle, but you also have that feed input cost that's really been a concern for those on the balance sheet. Is that going to be the big weight around the neck of the feeder right now?
Well, that's a great point. And so in Southwest Wisconsin, there's a sale barn this week that had 650 to 700 pound feeders going for like 148 to 150. Not cheap, but the demand is there. And so people are buying these feeders. And if you do the math on the feed costs, and assuming you can lock in feed prices where they are right now, you need, for a break even come June or August, you need 114, 115. And so the market needs to deliver on that in order for those feeders to be profitable. I have a friendly view for live cattle prices heading out into second and third quarter, similar to what Matt was saying. I'm keeping an eye on the June contract. I think that there's some technical momentum building there. And with the production expected to be lower because of that low placement, those deferred contracts have a lot of fundamental stability and support. And also keeping an eye on, as dry as it is in the plains out west and the drought that continues to grow there, I think the cattle story still is a story that has got some bullish momentum to it in the deferred contracts.
All right, Matt, I'm sorry to the hog market. 15 seconds, because I want to talk about expansion in the market when it comes to China. But in 15 seconds, where are we headed on hogs?
I have a hard time getting friendly in the hog market if you're going to give me 15 sacks. I just can't do it. I think, especially when you're talking about expansion, you know, I don't think China's the only place that wants to expand on pork production. And so it's tough for me to get friendly.
I apologize for the shortness. We will get more of it in Market Plus. That's Naomi Bloom. That's Matthew Bennett. Thank you so much to the two of you. Appreciate your time.
Thank you.
That will do it for this installment of Market to Market, but we will talk more in Market Plus, so join us there. You can find it on our website at markettomarket.org. You helped push us past a threshold of support on our YouTube channel. Thank you so very much for joining our club. There's still time to join us, as the benefits include knowing when we've posted new videos of the program. Also, the same with Market Plus and stories that you have seen on air. Search Market to Market and click subscribe today. Next week, we'll look at a Christmas tree farmer, how they're battling the drought. We'll see you next week.